And hello and welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is my co-host,
Scotty Hertz. And I just want to say, Adam, you are the wind beneath my wings.
We do not want to go there.
No, well, because Editor-in-Chief Adam A. Donaldson instructed me to sing that to you.
Jeez.
So I did.
Great.
Adam now Adama I have, Donaldson.
Now I have that reputation.
Yes.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and the Google Play. Today we're going to talk about TPP. Just when you thought it was gone, it's back, and this time Canada's calling the shots, it seems. Is this good news or bad news for us? And then we will welcome back Ward 5 City Councilor Leanne Piper to the show. There's so much going on to talk about, including budget, hydro, town and gown, and we'll get into all that. And first of all, though, you may know the name Jordan Peterson. He has risen to some prominence for his stand on free speech and against political correctness, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But with his new website he was planning on starting, he seemed to be targeting his fellow professors at the University of Toronto and their coursework, and he may have finally gone too far there, Scotty.
Yeah, I mean, a stance is one thing, but this guy's taking it to a completely different level. As you said, the psych professor at the U of T. He's also, he's a clinical psychologist by training, but he's become an alt-right pinup boy. Hope he doesn't hear that. we might end up on the cultural Marxist blacklist or something.
Oh, my goodness.
You've probably heard of this guy. If you haven't, he was initially in the news a while ago for his stance on the non-binary gender pronouns. He absolutely refused to call people by the pronoun of their choice. And to have an opinion on that, I think, is one thing. I believe linguistically the pronoun wars are another thing. Of course, there's some bleed into gender, obviously, and LGBT issues and whatnot. I think to take a stance on that is completely one thing, because I don't think the language behind that is accepted yet in terms of what we will use. Is it they? Is it she? it's complicated. But he's taken it to this other level, mm-hmm. where he said, what was his exact words? He's going to come up with a list of courses that cause indoctrination, or that courses that are indoctrination cults. Run by postmodern neo-Marxists. Yeah. And it seems he has some kind of software that's able to go through a course calendar. This is supposedly what he said. Go through a course calendar and determine by using keywords, probably like, you know, feminism or LGBT or whatever, to decide which courses you shouldn't take because they don't fit his vision, I guess. It sounds like the plan for this website is on hiatus. But he's raised, what did he raise? $500,000 just by like a patron account?
And yeah, I think that was originally for his series of YouTube videos that he was going to make, to like these lectures on free speech and being not politically correct. And so he starts his Patreon page, but
Indiegogo as well.
Yeah. But I guess he makes so much money from this. He doesn't know what to do with it. So he decided to come up with this website idea, which, you know, right off the bat, I think, first of all, I think it's kind of funny that we have this professor who's probably making a pretty decent salary on staff at the U of T.
I didn't look him up. He's got to be on the Sunshine List, for sure. My go-to thing, but yeah.
You know what?
He's making a good wage.
I won't attack the Sunshine List for, you know, the good professors, so I won't attack the Sunshine List for the bad professors.
As if he's hurting for dough.
He's not hurting for dough.
No.
So, yeah. And I have no problem if you want to, like, sort of crowdfund for your side project, but I'm well and truly shocked that of all the possible projects on Patreon, that this is kind of... that the cause of Jordan Peterson has gotten so many people riled up that he's able to like inhale just 50,000 per month because he's mad that he can't say he and she anymore. I mean, that's really quite out there.
Yeah, but like I said, it goes beyond the initials thing. He seems to be after everybody that doesn't fit into his alright vision.
Well,
he's playing to his base, right?
Yeah. If I may, he said his website would target women's studies, ethnic studies, and racial studies. So, you know, right there, the big three, you're pretty much saying, I'm going to attack anything that dares to contextualize and memorialize and just otherwise, you know, put people who have who habitually through history have been kept down by trying to raise them up and tried to raise the study of them up. And he says, like, he's looking at particularly subjects like sociology, Freudian slip, anthropology, and English literature. So, like, the very things...
Like his department, yeah.
The humanities.
They share an office block.
Yeah. Right? But, I mean, the very things that are sort of there meant to raise up these things. You know, Charles Dickens doesn't need the help in English literature. I think a lot of people know about Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
But Toni Morrison... Yeah, maybe we can expose some more white boys to Toni Morrison. That might be a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, Dickens being a classic, obviously you can break it down any way you like. But it's the big issue is that it has to fit his I was going to say square peg and round hole, but it's coming close to that. As of Monday, he said the plan for this website is on hiatus because he said that it might get this might add excessively to current polarization. This guy is all about polarization, right?
He's not entirely not self-aware, I see.
He's,
Another
comment was that he's fed up with the, quote, continual pushing by left-wingers, and is going to wake up the beast that uses its fists, meaning violence. He just has she's using this kind of epic... style, I guess, to try and make a point. I looked up the first lecture that came up when I Googled him, and I knew of him. It was titled "Identity Politics and the Marxist Lie of White Privilege," and it was 2.5 hours long. It's too long. Like, to me, it's you're gonna make your point. I don't know if anybody who even sides with the guy is gonna sit through 2.5 hours of him yammering. That's what it was. I think there was a couple of questions at the end. I did this sort of go through it fast. And I'm like, it must be challenging to sit through his lectures.
If you want to sit and watch something for 2.5 hours, go see Blade Runner 2049. I think it's still at the Galaxy.
I managed that, yeah.
But yeah, so this...
It's written by cultural Marxist. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, these seems like... I'm not sure where he's getting this, but it seems like all the alt-right sort of buzzwords. I mean, in so much as you want to accuse the people who, you know, social justice people who want to chase identity politics, I mean, that's valid, but you want to attack them for doing all these buzzy things and you know, having to have the nomenclature and having to have your buzzwords and your keywords and all that. But then he's doing the same thing. He's like, I know what to get people brought up, Marxist, postmodern.
The
code sounds kind of iffy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's doing all these things too. And, worst of all, he's kind of following the worst instincts of the alt-right. If this was purely a free speech stand, I think we would both get behind him. But this is not. This has become. I may have spoke too soon, but this has become something else entirely. He's attacked students who have sort of rallied and are protesting against his brand of free speech. He's attacked them personally by posting links to their private Facebook or their personal Facebook pages on Twitter. He's reposting stuff from InfoWars, which any reasonable academic knows is 100% vile bullcrap. It's not to mention conspiracy drenched nut. And also there was a story, I think it was earlier this week or last week, that it turns out Alex Jones has ripped off thousands of articles from Russia Today. So not only is he a phony, not only is he a conspiracy theorist whack job, but he's also plagiarizing from Russian propaganda.
But is Russia Today Creative Commons? I think it is. I know Al Jazeera is. You can play Al Jazeera. You know, you can quote widely from it. It doesn't matter.
But he wasn't crediting it.
Well, that's...
Those Creative Commons usually ask you to credit stuff.
Yeah. Maybe there's some fine print somewhere. I don't know. But this is the problem with Peterson and his ilk is that they do this. They'll single people out. They'll say, "Oh, this person said this on Twitter," and then the pile on begins. And that's the problem when this vile stuff just starts. The gang and the question is, as you said about free speech, it's like it immediately with this guy goes beyond the U of T. If this was an internal argument, and I would say, for argument's sake, a pre kind of information age world. Let's say this argument was taking place 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It would be like Peterson versus the Varsity Paper or versus yeah. somebody in his class. It would almost take place within the realm of the lecture hall and the environment at U of T. But it wouldn't go – it wouldn't be like some guy from Alabama is chiming in and say, I agree with Peterson. And, you know, like that, this is where it's out of control. Now, I mentioned the Varsity, which is the U of T equivalent of the Ontarian here in Guelph, called him a petulant child. They've had this back and forth for a long, long time.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to say it is between Peterson and the
yeah,
Varsity.
Peterson
anyway.
And the Varsity. And the Varsity says something. Peterson's like, rah. And he's like, I will do an interview with you, but I'm going to record everything on Skype so I can expose you, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the Varsity's comment is, and I think there's something to it, is that they're saying that the university
oh, yeah.
is kind of the parent and doesn't know how to discipline the petulant child.
Yeah,
in Peterson, they don't know what to do with this guy. It's like because he just goes, "Ah, free speech," but not for you or you or you or you. You know, it's free speech for the free speechers, but we're gonna shut anybody else down that remotely is a pinko commie lefty deviates from the norm, and seems he has issues with women too. Like there's like all of tick all the boxes with somebody you're gonna see in a right wing march. He's the guy, right?
And, you know, I think there's definitely an onus on U of T to rein it in because not only is he making a spectacle of himself in the campus, his classroom at the institution, he's also raising big money off of his position.
Yeah. And that might be a conflict with his contract, right?
Yeah. I mean, if he's making like $50,000 a month, that's $600,000 a year on top of his U of T salary. So, I mean, I think there's a certain acceptable point of view that, you know, when you're a faculty member, you're, you know, probably writing books, doing research, doing peer-reviewed journal articles, things like that, that you've got side stuff going on that's within your realm.
That too, as of course,
yeah, exactly. But this goes far beyond that, and I don't think anyone's from the university is proctoring him. And so the Varsity is right in pointing that out, but on top of that, I think the university is afraid to proctor him. And I'm not sure why, because it's not like a protest from alt-righters is going to shut down the U of T.
No.
Or anything
but
like that.
But it's – I get the impression that Peterson wants to be made martyr. So he
yeah.
can say, you see?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
see they fired me. And then he can go off and do his own Alex Jones thing and milk that for all that it's worth.
Probably
and probably
the
make
Rebel.
Yeah, or in the Rebel, you name it. And make the money, make a ton of money for a time. But, yeah, if you're thinking about giving to Peterson, don't. Just give it to Guelph Politico or somebody that can actually use it and do something like that's actual. Well, I mean, that's, you know.
I'll take your money.
Yeah.
Alt-writers, I'll
too,
take your money.
So will CFRU. We try to remain fair and balanced here as possible, but there's a time where there's a bit of a tilt.
If I can just take this
yeah.
in another devil's kind of advocate direction here. There was up the road at Waterloo, or not Waterloo, at Wilfrid Laurier, a TA there who has been kind of, I don't know if I used the word suspended, but she played a portion of a clip that of a debate Peterson was in that was played on TVO of all places, moderated by Steve Paikin of all people.
Yeah,
and she played this in a Canada Communication in Context class, and she was cited that she was transphobic and that she was, you know.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so, you know, in so much as we want to hate Peterson, or maybe not hate Peterson, but, you know, kind of dismiss him for his sort of crazy, like, free speech rants, the flip side is true, too. I understand that Peterson's a disgusting character, but apparently this student's professor compared him to Hitler,
the Hitler comparison.
Yeah, she
said. The argument's lost when you say, you're Hitler.
Yeah, she said her professor said to her, you know, would you, you know, play Hitler in a neutral context? Which, because you can't play Hitler in a neutral context because.
No, it needs to be curated. But if you're showing something that was on the public, the province's
public TV,
broadcast.
The main public, you know, the main public interest
totally
program
like,
on public TV.
Who have lawyers and vet things like everybody else.
Hosted by a guy who has moderated
yeah.
prime ministerial debates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of going too far. So in as much as, like, Peterson is this crazy. Crazy dude. there is a kernel of a point.
Yes. I'm sure we'll be revisiting this, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to our second topic of the week, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Or, you know, there's kind of like a weird name to it now. It's like the amended Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's like the
Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for right. Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will probably still be called TPP.
But the CPTPP. Yeah, because
TPP-1.
I mean, the
TPP
one that was
11.
Yeah, TPP-11, because I guess this was like the version 10 that was the one that was approved before that Trump put
the kibosh
on. It's
like the old Microsoft naming convention. Just slap a number.
Yeah,
we'll call it, I guess.
But I mean,
11.1.
Yeah, you're right, because everyone calls it TPP and everyone's still calling it TPP. But this is last weekend in the APEC conference, since a lot of the players were there. Japan and Australia seem to be or in Vietnam as well, seem to be drivers of this, getting TPP back on board without the United States. And it seems to have happened. There are a number of provisions suspended, including some of the more controversial bits, including the intellectual property bit, which was mostly there to appease a lot of American IP holders, so like your Disney's and your Warner Brothers. So, Scotty, are you now excited about TPP? Slimmer?
You know me. I just can't hold my excitement back when I hear about stuff like this. I found it interesting that Trudeau has became the, I wouldn't call him the strongman necessarily, but they took him very seriously when he took a step back and
soft power, baby,
and said, and I also think there's just two things going on, that these countries like to have us in the agreements. They all seem to like Canada. Trudeau's a rock star down there when he goes for fast food or whatever. but also they I think they appreciate Canada as being a partner in these things. Not because that America, the US has stepped aside, but it's just that, you know, we're part of the gang, I suppose. Now one of the statements Trudeau said, you know, we're not going to be rushed into a deal. There was some question as to he kind of took a pass on a meeting. He was meeting with Shinzo Abe, and I guess that meeting went long, and Abe went to the meeting and said, look, you know, Canada, this and that, we're in conversation.
Yeah.
But some of the parties flew off the handle. In particular, I think it was the Australia mainstream media was like, Canada has sabotaged this deal. And that's my Jumbach accent. And New Zealand's like,
that's not a knife.
That's not the Taipei Pei. sorry, Australians. We didn't mean anything by that. New Zealand is like, oh, no show Trudeau. You know, so they're saying, oh, he wasn't. But he explained himself quite well. He said there are things in this agreement that we don't like. It's going to take the time that it takes to come up with this agreement. We don't want to rush into it. And it's quite possible. And also, it sounded like Mexico had Canada's back, eh? He had a meeting with, is it Nieto?
Yeah, Peter Nieto.
And said, you know, he's like, well, you know, you helped us out in this. So it's the scratching of the backs of the parts of North America that are not America. So,
because technically Mexico could get in on this. Mexico has a Pacific coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is fascinating. Even if you struggle with like the intricacies of international trade, like I do. It wasn't just the Australian media that flew off the handle. A lot of it was like I saw two different headlines in the Financial Post. One was about how Trudeau blew it by not showing up to the meeting. And the other one was about how Trudeau played it just right by shaking off the meeting.
In the same paper.
Paper, like different days, different columns.
Battling it.
But that goes to show you just how much stock to put in economic science. But depending on who you ask, you're either a dope or a genius. Which might explain a lot about Trump, but the interesting thing about this is the Mexico angle. I think it is partially because Canada is still at the table, and the U.S. is not. Without Canada, it looks like intra-Asia trade with Australia. With Canada, it looks a bit more global. So it makes sense that Trudeau. And Canada's trade delegation period might feel like they have the upper hand here. It also makes sense that Mexico would back up Canada and that Canada would sort of lean on Mexico, because those are the two against one seemingly in the NAFTA renegotiations too, because there's those negotiations, I think they started around 5 this week in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Those seem to be going nowhere fast, despite the presidents of the United States' desire to see a deal by year end and his constant threat to tear up the deal. But it's on top of it all, it's you know, it helps Mexico, because if NAFTA goes down, they could easily side with Canada and go with TPP as another way to increase their free trade profile with or without the United States. The real loser in all this is, frankly, the United States.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, and Mexico could go either way too. Maybe they could come up with an agreement with Europe as well on their own, as Canada did. But this is the thing with the States, is that the whole America First thing, in the scheme of things, when it comes to international trade, is leaving them kind of isolated and mm-hmm. alone, really. It's like, America, we're going to go it alone. It's like, well, you can't. That's not how we're – regardless of how you feel about economics and politics, you cannot really go it alone. You end up in North Korea, pretty much.
It's not just about going it alone.
Or Zimbabwe.
You're not wrong, but it's not just about going it alone. It's that Trump was there and left with nothing, and it looks like he didn't even really try. You know, there was no kind of announcement that came out of this that, like, oh, we're in talks now about bilateral agreements with Japan and Vietnam and China and Philippines and all these places. All we really heard about the trip is they treated me extremely well, and that seemed to be satisfactory.
Was, yeah. And that he was serenaded in the Philippines, I was like, yeah. But, as I alluded to at the top of the show,
But yeah, I mean, that's the bizarre thing in all of this is the United States, once the world leader on economics, free trade, is now the proverbial cheese that stands alone, and the person who should care about it most doesn't seem to. And on top of all that, I was reading about the NAFTA negotiations. Apparently, they're using TPP as kind of a template for the new NAFTA agreement, and it's like, do you guys not listen to yourselves? Or did somebody, like, take a copy of the TPP, erase Trans-Pacific Partnership, and wrote NAFTA proposal on it instead?
TPP and the, like, the toilet paper sense is just like, whatever. Trade agreements and pacts are a balancing act, and there's no balance when it comes to Trump. It's just that his side... With that side, there's no nuance. It's just, I hate this. Yeah. So, I mean, he shows up. He's phoning it in for sure. really, it's just like he's just kind of there. And it's like, I'm here. Blah, blah, and nothing's getting done. And I think the real work for them is to be in the future, we'll call it the post-Trump world, because that's probably what it's going to take to undo the damage that will inevitably be done over the next however many years when they've done a solid on this without the U.S.
Well, but the question is, by then, will it be too late? Because they're thinking that they will have a agreement in principle on the new TPP probably sometime in 2018. Mm-hmm. And by that point, you're still about 2-3 years away from a new president, if a new president's coming in. And, you know...
It will be. But I guess never say never, but I mean,
well,
that's...
Well, Biden's already, like, beating him in polls, and there's... Biden hasn't even declared...
It looks like it's hard to beat Trump in a poll now, right?
Right. That's terribly true. But the flip side of it is, too, that in the abandonment of American leadership... who is kind of stepping in is Xi Jinping, the president of China, because he was the one saying, free trade is great. Being open economically is great. You know, let's all be friends. And, of course, one of the things about TPP was about creating an economic bloc that could stand up to China.
Exactly.
Which, you know, you may disagree with a lot of the things in TPP, and I understand it. I disagree with a lot of things in TPP. But... if you don't want to be bowled over by China, this was kind of the way to do it. And now it looks like China's going to be maybe this. I can't read the tea leaves that well, but it certainly leaves TPP more open to working with China. Because if you're going to have an anchor, I guess kind of using the mall example, if you're going to have kind of like an anchor tenant you only have so many options.
And it ain't Sears. Yes.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be Sears because Sears is too busy shooting itself in the foot.
It's going to be.
Is it going to be the new?
China's largest chain, whatever
Best
that is.
Best Buy. Because most stuff at Best Buy is
This is the, I mean, you know that the future as presented in Firefly where everybody kind of knows a little bit of Chinese and swears in Chinese. That's the direction. Do you remember when China and Russia and these partners were all secondary? Now it's like they're, you know, China, Russia alone is just probably a tag team that may crush America's influence on the world. It's happening, right? It's happening.
Well, China's...
You don't want to do a deal? We'll just do a deal with these people. We don't care. We'll do a deal with Europe. We'll do a deal with... the Pacific.
Well,
Russia's, even though they're still our partner, they're our biggest partner. Like, we can't let them go.
Right. Russia's tricky, of course, because of Putin, and we'll have to wait and see how corruptly Putin wins the Russian election next year. joking, half joking. There is definitely a switch in the economic tables, and it's kind of startling to see America just be fine with not being a part of it. It's so weird after decades of that kind of leadership.
I think that's the thing, though, is that they're not fine. It's like they're almost hoping, like, oh, Trump, come on, man. Like, just can you... But he can't. He is incapable of doing this. And I would say, in my opinion, he's incapable of doing the job that he's been given.
Bold statement.
Completely. I wouldn't say completely. I mean, he's pretty good at the suppers and all that when they're feting him. And Melania, or is it Melania's twin? We don't know. But the Melania's twin conspiracy continues. And something like APEC, there's an APEC parallel summit as well. APEC, not parallel, but kind of occurring at the same time. APEC operates on consensus, which is impossible with somebody like Trump. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, we'll leave that bad news there. And we'll take a break. We're going to play some music, and then we'll be right back with our interview with Leanne Piper. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
An album brand new into the station. Terry Lynn Williams Davidson, and the album's called Grizzly Bear Town. I believe she's from Haida Gwaii. She has a lovely Haida hat on anyway. That just fresh stuff. The track is called The Peacemaking Song.
Peacemaking? That sounds like a really great song to play into our interview today, because we always like to make peace around the council table, don't we?
Peace and harmony.
So I want to welcome back to Open Sources, Leanne Piper, Ward 5 City Councilor. How are you doing, Leanne?
Great. Thanks for inviting me. It's always good to be here.
Sorry. Don't mind my reach there. I understand that we're actually pretty lucky we're able to get you in because you had a bit of difficulty a few weeks ago with certain leaves of three.
Yes, as a matter of fact, you heard that rumor, did you? Yes.
I heard the rumor.
As a piece of advice, when poison ivy dies off the surface, it doesn't mean the roots aren't still alive underneath.
Solid advice. We don't want to get into horticulture or anything, but I guess we'll start with this. Because it was mentioned this week in council and in terms of the homecoming, what happened earlier this year. This is kind of your backyard because it concerns the university, which is Ward 5. I know there's also a town hall coming up next week, but I also know that there have been discussions since homecoming and what's coming up next week. So if you could enlighten us in sort of behind the scenes in terms of what some of those discussions have entailed and perhaps where you've the things you've heard from and how you've engaged between city and university and the various neighborhood residents?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the first things that happens during, well, during the actual activity itself and then the next morning for the next couple of days is my ward mate and I, Kathy Downer, we hear from neighborhood residents and they're angry, they're upset, they're frightened, they are disillusioned, they don't feel that they got the response from our police services and our bylaw that they should have received, when a major event is happening. So the mayor met with the president of the university, Dr. Vaccarino, and discussions have happened with our bylaw, with our Guelph Police Services, and we're trying to bring all the parties together. They're stakeholders in many layers. It isn't just a city police and bylaw problem. Our neighborhood associations, our student government, the CSA has been involved. The CSA is going to be present at the town hall we're having next week. Manager of off-campus living here at the university. So there's lots of players who are coming to the table and finding a solution. It is not the first time that Guelph has experienced larger than average parties of this nature. And mm-hmm. I don't want to wash it away and say, well, other university towns have bigger problems, because Queens, Waterloo, London are all experiencing the same kind of town and gown conflicts.
Right.
Guelph, I think we've been pretty lucky because we've had a really proactive approach to this. I mean, everything from Project Safe Semester to, pre-education on parties and our off-campus living manager doing home visits. So we do a lot of preventative work. Sometimes you just can't prevent a large disruptive party from breaking out. And we put our resources where we think they're best served. And it means that some neighborhoods didn't get the enforcement that they needed on both homecoming and Halloween. And, weather plays a factor. Yeah. The outcome of the homecoming game plays a factor. There's just so many things that create the perfect storm for the disruption that happened this year.
Didn't Guelph lose this year?
We did,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was, anger generated. but you're right about the weather, and I think the mayor mentioned that in one of his responses, that, it was unusually nice. I mean, it was summer nice.
Yeah.
It usually is nice that weekend. It's usually one of the last great weekends. But, I mean, it was a July weekend.
Yeah. Homecoming, Halloween, and St. Patty's Day are the three times of year where you're just so dependent on weather and other circumstances. And you can put all the proactive plans in place, and it's still going to be dependent on a number of different factors.
Well, that's the thing. It's been fairly chill. I mean, there are always issues. There's always sort of individual problems. Some nights are worse than other nights. But overall, this kind of thing's gone away over the last several years. And I actually wrote a thing in Guelph Today before the start of the school year. It's like, students aren't that bad. And then, 48 hours and, that kind of goodwill is shot after years.
And that's a good point, because in the 90s and the early 2000s, before there was a lot of proactive enforcement, before the university population grew out into the neighborhoods in the way that we are currently seeing student density in some neighborhoods, these things happened. This is not the first time it's ever happened. We've, over the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years, just been really lucky. The neighborhoods have been fairly quiet, relatively speaking.
I think what's new is the party of 3,000, 4,000, and 5,000 people being driven, probably most likely by social media rather than...
Right.
So that's definitely a change. But yeah, you would handle it the same, whether it's 500 or 3,000. But
yeah, you would used to have to actually be able to take flyers around. Yeah. Now you can post on Facebook and say, Barty at Brad's. And
yeah, and there's some, new terminology. Broofing is a thing. And, there's...
I don't even know what that is.
Broofing, drinking on the roof of your house. So it's a public safety issue. So there's lots of...
That's because our idea of partying is sitting quietly at the corner of the pub, sipping on a beer for 3 hours.
Watching Netflix, yesterday.
Yeah. Back in my day.
Old timers now, Adam. Holy cow.
But, it's not going to go away in subsequent years either.
Sure.
We just need to start talking about different ways of approaching it, making sure the resources are spread evenly throughout the city. Our Guelph Police Service is top notch when it comes to working with the university and planning ahead. They have operational plans for these big events. So it wasn't that they weren't unprepared. Mm-hmm. It's just that the resources that got drawn into the Chancellor's Way party took away resources from the adjacent neighborhoods. And so there were no officers to respond when calls started to come in of smaller nuisance parties. And so, you know, the operational plans are being reviewed. And I think we're responding really well to the neighborhood concerns. And the neighbors are rightfully upset that that those concerns that the parties got out of hand, and their concerns have been heard loud and clear.
What do you hope comes out of the town hall next week? Because I think the cynical part of me says the ones having the good time and causing the issues probably aren't going to be rolling up there to apologize. And I think, you know, in so much as, yeah, the CSA is going to be there and university reps are going to be there, but I don't think, you know, the heads of the CSA were amongst the party animals on Chancellor's Way, and I don't think the university admin was there either. So I wonder if, you know, there's going to be an element missing to this, which is the students themselves who maybe got a bit out of hand, and how do we talk to them?
Mm-hmm. And that's an excellent question, because, you know, what I would love to come out of it, I mean, other than peace and harmony, is an understanding that we can't demonize the entire student population, mm-hmm. and that neighborhoods who have valid concerns about their quality of life and disruption have to at least acknowledge that it was a very small percentage of the population, that right. overall the university adds great cultural and economic value and social value to our city, and that being good neighbors goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So introduce, you know, neighbors, permanent residents need to introduce themselves to their student neighbors, welcome them to the neighborhood, establish community standards, expect restorative justice when things go wrong. I know the university takes a great restorative justice approach in that, we'll do a neighborhood cleanup, we're going to make amends for the damages that were done or the noise. I do think it is a small minority, and I have come to realize that it's not just University of Guelph students. There's locals, there's high school students, and there's out-of-town students who come here and disrupt our community. And we all need to work together to protect our neighborhoods, because there are a lot of students that I've talked to who've said, you know, we were disturbed by the party, we didn't go to that party, but we called in the noise complaint. The highest number of bylaw noise complaints in the city is at Chancellor's Way. And those are students reporting students.
Right.
Which is really interesting that there is.
Because who else lives on Chancellor's Way?
Right. Exactly. And so the, you know, peer-to-peer approach to managing the problem is also a good approach. I do think that there was a huge backlash from students. You know, we're sorry, it wasn't us, and an apologetic tone, and that was great. But I don't want to live in a community where students have to feel like every time they walk down the street or go somewhere that the permanent resident population has demonized them to the point where they're feeling this sense of guilt and shame that they don't deserve.
Sure. And I think what you raised earlier was a key point, is getting to know your student neighbors and not immediately assuming they're going to be up to no good. And I've talked to people who, I spend a day working at a polling station with an older lady who lived in the university neighborhood, and she's, you know, she lived next to a revolving door student home that, you know, every year there's a new class of young people who live there, and she always goes and introduces herself, and, you know, because it is harder to offend someone, you know, you can't say, oh, we can't have a loud party because Ralph's going to get mad at us or whatever. So it's, you know, it's a two-way street is what I think we're trying to say.
Absolutely.
Speaking of two-way streets, I did want to address, while we had you here, the potential, we'll still call it potential merger with Electra. I think there may be a feeling that this is a done deal, and I'm wondering how you're feeling and, you know, what you're hearing and what you're anticipating coming up next month when that meeting happens.
Another interesting question. Nothing is ever a done deal until the buttons are pressed, yes or no. And information is still flowing about Electra, about the ownership of Electra, about what are the benefits. There's no, you know, we're still investigating what the conditions of a merger would be. So there's still a lot more information to come before that decision's made. So it could go either way. I'm hearing my colleagues asking a lot of questions with it, which I think is great, because whatever the outcome is, it should be a fully informed decision, fully transparent. All the information should be on the table for counselors to be able to make a fully informed decision. And we're still asking those questions.
Well, let me put Scotty on the spot, because you actually went to one of the info nights.
I went to the info night at City Hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was your feeling coming out of that?
Well, I asked the same question, because I got the impression, as others do in the neighborhood and people I know, that it is a done deal, just simply because it appeared I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but here's this company. Maybe you know a little bit more about it, Leanne. The courtship of the whole thing. Did Electra approach the city? Was it a mutual thing? Was it? That's what's sort of up in the air. I think people are like, yeah, mergers are happening. Brampton, Mississauga, all these places have come online. But it's just kind of like they just seem to be taking everything over. And another thing I've had to explain to people is that it isn't going private. The impression with the name of a company like Electra, which sounds like a fake thing out of the movies, is Electra, but it's whatever, is that it's private.
Sounds
but
like
it's
a superhero character.
It's not private at all, is it? It's like a public, how would you describe it?
Well, Electra is actually a new name that arose out of a merger of another bunch of municipal hydro utilities. So it's a growing group of mergers. So Powerstream, Horizon Utilities, Markham, Vaughan, Brampton, Mississauga, St. Catharines, Hamilton. So Electra is just a new name for a group of municipal utilities.
But it's all still run by and in control of the municipalities. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
That is my understanding, okay, yes. And again, we're still asking those questions to ensure, because I know for me, one of the things that is really important in that decision is that it is a 100% municipally owned utility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think to address Scotty's point, a lot of it, and I think I addressed this in one of my columns too, that there was that feeling it was kind of sprung, that there was and I realized there were things going on behind closed doors, not out of legal necessity, and but we seem to go to zero to merger without, not that I'm saying there wasn't any public input, but there was a kind of understanding that we were heading in that direction, and then all of a sudden we were there. It's like we fell asleep in the back seat, and all of a sudden we were there.
But they're the only logical suitor, too, though, right? There's nobody else in the neighborhood that's going to take on the utility, or was there? Like, there's no.
Well, and I can't go into closed session information, but suffice to say that we didn't go from zero to Electra overnight. There were discussions with. You know, it was an examination. I think the way that it's been phrased is we're looking for a dance partner. So, you know, go back to your high school days. You're scouting the gym. You're looking for various dance partners. You ask a couple of them, would you like to dance? And a couple of them say, yeah, I might want to dance. And then you kind of do a little checking each other out, and then eventually you choose your preferred dance partner. So there was a lot of that back and forth.
I should add that doesn't reflect my high school dance experience at all. go on.
Mine either. Maybe it's a bad analogy, but trying to think of another one. But you know, it didn't go straight to Electra.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And I think the learning curve for the community is, and I'm glad to hear you went to an open house night, is utilities, the traditional local distribution company is no longer exists. That our traditional power coming from Niagara, 80% is lost in transmission. And everything's put through power lines and everyone's dependent on the grid. Those days are gone. We're heading into an era of battery walls, a generation, rooftop generation. We still need the grid. And we still need to be able to connect the producer with the user. So I live on a house with solar panels. You live in an apartment that needs power. We need to connect somehow. The mm-hmm. utility company becomes really nothing more than a software company where your inputs and outputs and tracking and billing. So the traditional utility has to evolve. It has to morph into something different. And so merger is the way utilities are handling that.
Mm-hmm. So having said all that, what's your calculus going into next month's vote? You know, what questions are you looking to answer still, or is your mind even made up?
My mind isn't made up because we haven't seen the final, you know, the final document of what exactly all the conditions are going to be. But I can tell you what I'll be looking for. I'll be looking for a commitment to community energy, a commitment to keeping jobs local, a commitment to keeping a local presence in terms of a headquarters or an R&D center, a commitment to public ownership, and a commitment to being able to have the stability and the reliability of our electricity grid. Those are things that I'd be looking for.
And was this the Green Technology Center that was mentioned, a bit of a incentive, I guess, for Guelph to come on board? It was in the literature about the Guelph. There will be an alternative technology center mm-hmm. built in Guelph.
So. We have this beautiful headquarters that isn't very old, and it's a green building with a solar roof, and it's we don't want to lose that local presence. Right. So the way to keep that local presence and keep that headquarters operating, the idea of an R&D center, an eco building, technology center, that is so Guelph, really, because we need to be exploring innovation, and I hope that happens in Guelph.
Well, we could always put condos on it. But anyway, that's another story.
Scotty, it is condos.
For another day.
The other big thing going on, obviously, is the budget.
Budget. Yeah. We had budget today.
Yeah. Yes, we did. I wanted to start with this because the mayor mentioned it prominently in last week's meeting about how he's worried that there's maybe overreaction, that the rate hike for next year is going to be close to 5%. And I guess the crooked media, such as we are, may have painted that broader brush. But
Fake news.
But I'm wondering, from your perspective, because I think Jerry Barker would call you one of the Gang of Seven. So,
gangster, pure gangster.
Never gangster. Heard that term before, and I refuse to read that fake news.
We read it, so you don't have to.
But, you know, under that theoretical construct that, you know, you would be someone who'd be okay with a tax hike of whatever. But, I mean, just in terms of what you've heard so far from constituents, and is there a concern that about the tax thing?
Affordability is always a concern, and I share that concern. That's real for a lot of people. What I think is important to recognize is that a 5%, when we're talking about 5%, we're not talking about 5% raise in your taxes and Scotty's taxes and my taxes. We're talking about the difference between the 2017 budget and the 2018 budget.
Right.
And taxes are actually a simple mathematical formula of mill rate times assessment value. So there's a lot of factors that go into what your individual taxes are going to up. So if there's a 5% increase in what the city needs to run the city, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean your taxes are going up 5%.
Right.
And the other thing that it's important to remember is that part of that is an infrastructure levy. And that's a really significant change in the way that we as a city are budgeting. Because you know as a taxpayer that 1%, that 1% isn't going to, you know, cutting grass at a park or putting in, new swing set here and or whatever. You know that that's going to infrastructure. And that is good long-term planning in my books.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting off just the pure numbers of it, I know that it seemed to me, and you know, maybe you can lend your insight on the other side of the glass wall there, but it seems to me that considering we're going into an election year, there's not a lot of sort of red meat. There's not a lot of we're doing this and we're creating great opportunity. It's a very much a kind of stay the course budget, and that was very much reflected in all the local boards and the shared services budget too. It's like
it
we
is.
Have to deal with, 3-4% increase because it's going to cost us more for staff next year, but that seems to be across the board.
And that's growth as well.
Yeah.
Like people, I think it's important to realize that those increases are, we have more roads to plow and more garbage cans to pick up and more acres of land and subdivisions to police. So those are growth numbers too. But we also have the growth in assessment,
mm-hmm.
which will affect the mill rate.
Mm-hmm. Which we don't get till after.
Right. We don't set that till March.
Yeah, which is bizarre. But
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's bizarre in our case because I do know that other municipalities will start budget processes in the new year. But,
yes.
You know,
yes.
But we, and I think Toronto too, likes to get it done before the new year.
Yeah. Just to set the overall budget so
yeah.
that January 1st we can hit the ground running. But you're right, mill rate we can't calculate till we get all the assessment and then we can actually calculate people's taxes.
So I want to address this part in particular because it seemed to be where the focus was, library.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get people's hopes up, but it does... Scotty's laughing.
But we pray every night for a library.
Before we die, please.
Well, that was kind of the joke at the meeting. But yeah, I feel like it's going to happen this time. But I feel like there's also been times, and you probably remember them too, that it was going to happen, and then life happens. You know, economic crashes happen, and
yes,
and then it's 10 years later. So realistically. If we're sitting here again next year, and we'll leave aside the whole thing, you have to get reelected first. But you know, we get together this time next year. where are we in that process? Do you think?
Well, one of the things we've tried to do in this term of council is to move the library along to the point where, you know, we use the word shovel ready, so mm-hmm. that we can take advantage of grants or opportunities or infrastructure funds that might come from another level of government. We took a big step forward in this term, I think, in getting shovel ready. Acquisition of property along Wyndham was one. We've got the Baker Street site RFP out, will be starting. So those incremental changes, I think, have brought us to a point where a library is imminent. And I would like to see the next term of council not just put the shovel in the ground, but actually open the library.
Mm.
At the very, very least, kind of my ceiling of tolerance on building the library, 2027. 2027 is Guelph's bicentennial.
That's right.
We have to have that library open by our bicentennial. It was actually, John Galt's original vision for the city was a center of excellence and learning and innovation. And I think by 2027, if we don't have a library open and functioning, we have failed this community.
By the end of this decade, we will put someone in a new library.
Yes.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
That was my terrible JFK impression. Maybe before we wrap up, I did mention the election and you made a face. Fortunately, we're on radio and people didn't see. But, there's only so much time left for the end of term. And, you know, it's even shorter than that because by the time we get to next summer, it'll be on. Looking forward in, for 2018, what do you hope to get done? And this can be you yourself, or this can be council as a whole in terms of what's left to do before, you guys have to start reapplying for your jobs again.
Yeah, I mean, the budget takes up so much of our energy right now, and until the budget is set, we can't start focusing on the last 6 months of our term. The Municipal Act changed during this term of office, so it used to be you could declare on January 1st, and then mm-hmm. you could feel the politicking start within council chambers. Now you can't declare until May 1st. So
yep.
I'm hoping we've got at least 4 months where we can focus on getting a few more things done. So infrastructure projects, some downtown Baker Street RFP, parking garage projects that have been on the go, moving forward with the advocating for two-way go and getting the next phase of the parking strategy in place. There is a lot we can do before the end of this term, and you know, realistically, some things are going to have to wait for next term. So the election, I think, is going to be about a commitment to those projects and those visions.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leanne, we thank you for your candor as always. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Easiest way is email Leanne, L-E-A-N-N-E dot Piper, P-I-P-E-R, at Guelph.ca. Or through the city telephone number 822-1260. My extension is 2295.
And remember the old saying, leaves of three, leave them be. Leaves of four, eat some more.
Where were you a month ago?
I was probably doing the show. But thank you for joining us today, Leanne.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Scotty. Great to be here.
Well, I guess that's it for this week's show. That's a wrap. Shall we wrap it up?
Let's shut her down.
Let's shut her down. Let's hit the pub.
Woohoo!
You can never say no to that. You can stay connected to Open Sources all week long on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Open Sources Newswire, or hit us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. What's so funny about hitting
us? Did you say hate us on Twitter?
I said hit us on Twitter.
Hit us.
Hit us on Twitter.
Don't hate us. Hit us.
Don't hate us on Twitter. And then you can hear past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can get in touch with me. You could hit me or hate me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook. Hate account Scotty at Scotty Hertz on Twitter. And you can really hate my blog at Blogspot. I did it again.
You did it again?
I did it again.
Oh, well.
It's been sorry, I'm very infrequent on my blog, which is called thespannerbook.wordpress.com. I promise I'll kick it up a notch in the coming season.
He'll promise to remember where he writes.
Deck those halls, man.
Deck the halls. And DJ sounds good to me. We'll be decking the halls here in a second. Here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. And we'll see you then.